Blog Talk Radio.
Thanks for joining us. Today we're going to talk about pebble wrestling. Finally, I've been promoting this for at least a couple weeks or so. We thought we were going to do it last week, but Matt, our guest, was unavailable, and so here we are. We're doing it this week. So, but first, before we get started, we're going to do today in history. This day in history, we got a couple of good ones today. 1963, Jack Ruby kills Lee Harvey Oswald. If y'all remember, just back a couple of days ago was when JFK was assassinated. And so on 2 days later, at 12:20 p.m. in the basement of the Dallas police station, Oswald, the alleged assassin of President JFK, is shot to death by Jack Ruby, a Dallas nightclub owner. And that was actually on live television. I didn't realize that until I had seen another article about this earlier. I don't know if it was today or yesterday, but I was reading, just happened to see it. And that makes sense because, I mean, otherwise, I mean, we wouldn't have such a great photo of it. You know, the famous shot of Oswald, you know, writhing in pain, you know, buckled over from the gunshot. I mean, talk about capturing history. And that was back before everybody had cell phones, you know, with a camera on them. So, okay. Second this day in history item, in 1971, now this is another kind of a biggie, hijacker and criminal mastermind D.B. Cooper parachutes out of a plane. I think most people have heard of D.B. Cooper. As far as I know, they never found him. I've seen lots of shows and, you know, documentaries and stories and write-ups about who he is and the investigation and what he looked like and so on and so forth. There's been movies made about it. He parachuted from the Northwest Orient Airlines 727 into a raging thunderstorm over Washington State. He had $200,000 in ransom money in his possession. He commandeered the aircraft shortly after takeoff, showing a flight attendant something. Let's see. Oh. Something. Showing the flight attendant something, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, $200,000. That's really weird. Anyway, let's move on to the subject. I had promoted this, and we called, and it's called marble wrestling, is what we're talking about today. But pebble wrestling. I called it boulder wrestling on one of the promos. Now I'm calling it marble wrestling. Let's see who we got here.
What do you do?
What? Hey, is this Matt?
Yes.
Hey, Matt. Hey. Were you listening to the show online, or did you just happen to dial in?
I just happened to dial in, and I heard just the tail end of something.
Yeah, I was calling it marble wrestling and boulder wrestling and everything else. But anyway, this is Matt Belajewski on here with us, as I've been promising for 2 weeks now, or 3 weeks. Welcome, Matt.
Howdy, everybody.
That sounded kind of funny. Welcome, Matt.
Oh God.
Boom, boom. I'll be here all 30 minutes. So I'm not going to take. I've had the hardest time remembering that it's actually called Pebble Wrestling. I did one video and I called it Boulder Wrestling, and then I was talking about it. I was looking it up and trying to find where the term Pebble Wrestling came from. And that fast I called it Marble Wrestling, and you know what I got Googled, I got these statues of marble wrestlers from like, you know, back in the day. But anyway, enough of that. Matt, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Stan. Thank you for the invite. I'm glad to be here.
So Matt and I, we know each other professionally, you know, first of all, but we've become friends. We've been hanging out, you know, just probably over a year or so. And
It's been 2 years, a couple of years.
Yeah. So in the meantime, you know, we talk about what we do in our spare time and what we do for fun. And Matt just happens to be a pebble wrestler. So Matt, go ahead. What is pebble wrestling?
Pebble wrestling is bouldering, which is a type of rock climbing where instead of using ropes, we don't use ropes. Basically, we climb on boulders that are generally less than 20 feet tall, depending, and we have these, they're called crash pads, which are kind of like, we carry them on our back with backpack straps, but when we get to a boulder in an area where we're going to work on a problem is different routes where you can go up a rock in different ways with different difficulty. When we get to the boulder and we take our crash pad off and it opens up kind of like a taco shell type thing. And then it's got about 5 inches of open and closed cell foam so that when we fall off the boulder, which is often every time, unless you about the boulder, then you avoid snapping your ankle or leg or whatever, none of that. So instead of using a rope to catch you when you fall, like normal rope climbing, you have the other people that are there with you spotting you and keeping your head and neck off the ground and making sure the pad is underneath you when you come off.
That makes sense. So the terminology you used there, problem, that kind of brings to light, and I've mentioned this in the promo videos, that you are actually the author of the book, Dixon School Road Boulders, Selected Problems. So I guess that's what you're talking about when you say selected problems. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So tell me about your early experience and interest in this, in bouldering. How did you get started doing that?
Start getting into rock climbing in... Wow, this would have been like June of 95 at an indoor climbing gym in Durham. And then I ended up a year later moving to Boone to go to Appalachian State. And there's a lot of rock and a lot of boulders around there. And I'd really only done mostly roped climbing up to that point. But due to college class schedules, I could be done at like 1 or 2 in the afternoon, and I'd still have, you know, 4 or 5 hours of light left, so I could get out after class. But the amount of setup for rope climbing takes a lot longer than bouldering, so bouldering was a good, quick, easy fix to get climbing in. And there's so much good bouldering in like a 30-minute radius from the Boone area that I started just doing it more and more and ended up enjoying it more than rope climbing. And that's kind of how I started. And here we are. I can't even do the math right now, but however many years later, still doing it. It's my life passion. And that led me to writing a guidebook for Dixon School Road Boulders, which at the time that I started the project had recently come back open. It was previously, there was no parking lot. So if people wanted to go to Boulders, they'd have to park their car at the side of the road and they'd get ticketed by the rangers. But fortunately, in 2009, the Carolina Climbers Coalition, which is a climbing advocacy group here in North Carolina, they were able to work with Crowder's Mountain State Park, and they were able to build a ranger station and a big parking lot, which solved the parking access issue. And there's plenty of room for people to park, and there's even a hiking trail that goes through there. And it's a real nice area. So I decided, well, you know, there's all these great boulders here. And if you've never been to an area before, you don't know where the easier warm-up problems are. And so you could start on something that's really, really hard, not knowing if you walk further up the hill, there's great warm-up stuff and a lot more stuff within your difficulty range. So I said, well, let's do this. Since access and parking isn't an issue. And one thing led to another, and 2.5 years of working on the project, and got the book together and got it published.
Well, that's awesome. Well, you know, you basically answered my next two questions without me even asking them. So I've got Mr. Scott. I'm going to pull him in. He actually lives up in the Boone area, up at Deep Gap. Mr. Scott, are you there?
Hello, I am. How y'all doing?
Hey, Scott.
We are doing great. So, Scott, Matt Scott.
Cool, man. It's fascinating stuff. I've been listening. Bouldering sounds at least as scary as climbing with ropes, but I'm glad you're into it. I know a lot of folks are. And at the time, at least, you were in a perfect place for it. Where do you live now, if I may?
I'm in Charlotte, down in the Ballantyne area, just outside
of
485.
So you're still able to get in on the Crowder's Mountain scene regularly, I guess.
Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah,
there's a lot of bouldering around here, too.
Cool.
Yeah, I didn't even know where the Dixon School Road location was until, you know, I looked at your link for your book, and then it talked about Crowder's Mountain, and I was like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. So, yeah, Mr. Scott, Matt, he actually, he treks right past my house quite often because I know he spends some time in the Uaries. And I know, Matt, since you've already answered my question about how you evolved to the where you are now and what inspired you to write the book and all that, one question I do have is, boy, my mind just went blank.
What do I do in
your... you do it about every weekend, don't you?
Oh, yeah, every good weather weekend.
Cool.
I'm out at least one of the days and going somewhere, depending on the seasons. Certain places are better to climb in the summer because when temperatures get hot in Charlotte, I can go up to the Boone area or to Grayson Highlands in Virginia, and it's perfect temperatures. And then once things get colder, there are other locations that open up.
Cool.
Yeah. Oh, I just remembered my actual question now. This is one I forgot to put in my notes. You showed me that you were actually doing some mapping and topology, you know, so far as recording and making record of boulders and all that good stuff. Are you working on that for maybe another book or for our web access for other boulderers, or what's the deal with that?
What I'm about a year and a half almost 2 years ago, I got into bouldering development, which is going to a place where no one has ever climbed on the boulders before and cleaning off all of the moss and lichen and pine needles or whatever gets on the holds or in the rock to reveal the holds that are on the rock, and then figuring out, okay, well, I could go this way and that would be one problem, and I could go another way and this could be another problem. And one of the cool things about development is the first person who does a particular problem from bottom to top without falling off gets what's called the FA, which stands for first ascent.
Cool.
And the person that gets the FA not only gets to give it a difficulty grade, but also gets to name it. And just like climbing routes are named, there's all sorts of silly bad puns that are related to the problem. Or, for instance, out at Dixon School Road Boulders, there is a boulder that's called the Decepticon boulder, and the three different problems on it are Galvatron, Megatron, and some other Tron from the Transformers series. And
yeah,
when I was creating the book, I got into the history section. I wanted to do a history section because people had been climbing there since 1981 or 82. And that's how I met some of my climbing mentors, Diab Raby and Gus Glitch. They had first ascents on probably 90% of the problems at Dixon School Road Boulders. And it was really great to get their input when I was writing the book, because back in the day, they only gave names to the problems that were really hard at the time.
Yeah.
So when I was doing the book, I wanted to have some way to reference them. So, you know, all right, well, I'm going to call this boulder this and this, and I'm going to call this particular problem this, just to have a way to reference it in the book, because the guys that had done the FAs didn't call them anything.
Oh.
So having a...
I wonder why. Kind of,
sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I wonder why they didn't name them.
It was kind of a thing of they were too easy, I guess. But
okay,
if you're climbing really hard, it's just kind of stuff that you really spend a lot of time on and a problem that you've worked for, you know, 3 or 4 months. And when you finally get the first ascent on it, you want to be able to tell people, hey, that thing right there that's really hard that I spent a lot of time on, this is what I'm calling it. But the easier stuff, kind of like,
yeah,
well, you know, whatever, it was cool, I've done it, but they didn't name it.
Okay.
It's beneath me.
That's cool. Well, Matt, I guess you were in Boone about the time the Howard's Knob boulder land became private. Well, it had always been private, but it had been climbed,
oh, yeah,
been climbed on a lot, and that was just another tragic. I don't do, never have done any climbing, but public access to beautiful places is it's pretty,
yeah,
and I know it's a touchy point, especially when there's billions of dollars involved. But whoever did the artwork on that, and I just want to make sure it wasn't you. There's lots of hand-drawn routes around, and the ones from Howard's Knob are pretty famous by now. But I thought that was a fascinating way to portray something rather than a contour map or something. It looked exactly like what you would find when you came out there, again, from a non-climbing standpoint, non-climbers standpoint. But whoever did that, I thought that was inspired, and I had never seen a map drawn like that, a picture of a map, I guess. But it shared each boulder and the routes and the ones that were about to be posted right around Howard's Knob. And I assume they still
correct
are.
Yeah, Howard's was great. When I went up to App in the fall of 96, my freshman year semester, you were able to climb there. And then the summer of 97, I believe, was when it officially got off limits to bouldering due to some rare plant species that only grew at a certain altitude in the Boone area, which is really sad. I mean, I totally understand, you know, conservation and all that. But it was sad for the bouldering community because it was such a great resource and so short from literally downtown Boone. You'd take one road by Stone Church and you could be at the parking lot, you know, in under 10 minutes, and the boulders were almost right there.
Cool.
And it was great, but sadly we lost that. But at the same time, other areas open up due to the efforts of advocacy groups like the Carolina Climbers Coalition, who fight really hard and talk to landowners and government officials to try and get new areas opened up. So it's kind of a give and take.
Cool. Someone had shown me the ones boulders on the Holloway Mountain Road, just like you described them. You'd never know you were there. They were there, rather, until you wandered off in the woods. I don't know.
Yeah.
If they're still available or not, but just assuming dirt roads through the laurels and suddenly there's huge boulders.
Mm-hmm. Holloway is, the best of my knowledge, all rope climbing, but I'm very familiar with the area and it's a great place for a quick, easy climbing session in the middle of the week without having to actually do bouldering because the cliffs are right there. You can park, get ropes set up, and go.
Cool.
And there's, you know, a lot of areas around Boone, which many of which don't have guidebooks. In fact, I don't think there are any guidebooks for the Boone stuff because guidebooks kind of get into a sensitive area with climbers because guidebooks, more people say, oh, okay, I can go to this area and know what I'm doing and know where to park and hike, et cetera. But that draws more people, and the more people that get drawn to an area, the more parking becomes an issue. And when a lot of people come to an area where there's only three parking spots, if you've driven from like an hour and a half or 2 hours away, you say, well, there's no parking, but I've driven this far, I'm going to find parking, and they end up parking private land or whatever, and that's not good for anybody. So before I did the Dixon guidebook, I was on the Carolina Climbers Coalition online forums, and I said, hey, guys, you know, I know how guidebooks are kind of not necessarily frowned upon, but how it becomes an access issue when you have the people there. And I kind of got the blessing of the climbing community there because I said, hey, you know, now we've got this great parking lot that holds like over 50 cars, you know, would it be cool if I do this? And the consensus was that yes, it's cool because the parking isn't an issue. Sure, go ahead and do it.
Cool.
So being in touch with the climbing community at large through the Carolina Climbers Coalition was really helpful and beneficial to make sure that I didn't create any unwanted impact on the area or unnecessary attention to the area.
Right. Matt, again,
I never
congratulations
thought of that angle.
For being published. I'm sorry. Congratulations on getting published. That's no small deal at all. That's cool.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Fortunately, I didn't have to convince some publishing house to publish my book. I was able to do it through Lulu.com, which I had never heard of till a fellow bouldering buddy of mine, Brad Caldwell, who lives in South Carolina. He had done some smaller guides and recommended that as a good way to do it because people would produce guidebooks and they would do a run of, I don't know, 150, 200 books, and then that was it, and they had to try and sell all of them, and then they couldn't do any more unless they had interest enough to do another huge run of books. But with Hulu, you can literally go on there and order one copy of the book, and it'll come to your door. So it makes self-publishing a lot more realistic, and you can still go on there and buy them now, as well as, you know, in Inner Peaks in Charlotte, they have copies there, and it's nice to get some great support from them too. Inner Peaks has been really supportive in all of the efforts that I worked on for the book and just climbing in general in the greater Charlotte area.
Cool.
So Matt, be more specific about how to get your book about the, you said, Lulu.com?
Yes. I would spell out the link for you, but it's kind of long. But
okay.
Maybe if I can send you the link, you could put it in the comment section for this show or
I'll
something.
I'll do that. You did send me the link, and I'll make sure I post it on my Average Joe Facebook page, and that way anybody that's interested. And then you said there was another – where did you say the other place was you could get a copy?
Oh, at Inner Peaks Climbing Gym. It's in Charlotte. They have a – their main location now is in South End off South Trine. The original location is the Crown Point location, and they're actually about to close that one down and open up an entire new gym in Matthews, which I'm really looking forward to because that's a lot closer to me than South Drive.
Yeah.
So it's really great. I have a great relationship with Doug Cosby, the owner of Inner Peaks. I've known him for at least 10 years now, and he really cares about the climbing community, and it's great to have his support.
That's awesome, Matt. You know, we're actually about out of time already. I never did put out the number for people to call in, but I think, you know, with everything that was being talked about, I really didn't want you to get interrupted, and Scott had some good questions, and I figured, you know, just since Scott's from that area, he would be he would know. Good job, Mr. Scott.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Great, Scott. You have a more of a unique perspective than your average non-climber where you're living. So, yes, thank you.
Cool. Well, I was always an avid backpacker, so I ran into you cats all the time. But I thought, why would you angle off of a perfectly good mountain on a rope? And I didn't know too many free climbers. They were the real scary dudes. So, again, my hat's off to you. That's pretty wild.
Well,
thank you.
Speaking of that, Matt, have you ever gotten hurt? Have you ever gotten any bad injuries doing that?
The worst injury I ever had was actually inside of a climbing gym. I hit a place where there was a pad that was dropping down to another pad, and it should have been more like a staircase drop down, but it was rounded, so I fell on it and rolled my foot and broke 3 bones in my foot.
Oh, wow.
I had to have surgery, and I was in a cast boot type thing for a good 4 months. And at the time, I was living in Raleigh, and the Raleigh Orthopedics, when I went there, they treat the Carolina Hurricanes hockey team. So they've seen some bad breaks. And when the doctor came into my room, he took one look at my foot and went, "Ooh." And when the ortho doctor says that, and he's been constantly treating hockey injuries,
yeah, that's really
good. That was
kind of
bad.
Well, I guess it was good you were in the facility and not out in the woods somewhere, because it could have been, bad, you know, to have a broken foot and trying to get you out of the woods. So I guess that was good time.
Absolutely.
If you're going to break a foot, do it there.
Yeah. The worst injury I've ever had outside was a sprained wrist from when I fell, and I fell on the pad, but then I kind of was bouncing back, and I made the mistake of putting my hand out to try and keep me from hitting the ground, and that's when I did it. So I was out for about 3 months there. But you know, compared to the foot business, that was great.
Yeah.
And what was the name of your book again?
Dixon School Road Boulder's Selected Problems.
Okay, cool. I'll start with
Dixon. Now we know what a problem is.
There you go. I got 99 problems, but something Jay-Z reference in there or something.
Yeah, cool. Well, listen, I guess we're going to have to roll out of here. We have already burned up 30 minutes, believe it or not. But thank you again, Matt, for joining us and sharing your experience. And it's an interesting subject. And thank you, Mr. Scott, for joining us and helping out.
Good to hear about Matt's, I would say travels, but a lot of traveling involved. That's pretty neat.
Great. Thank you for having me, and thank you, Scott. Thank you for your input. Great. I really enjoyed it.
Awesome. So join us next week on Average Joe Radio, same bat channel, same bat time. Don't know what we're going to be talking about. I just kind of shooting from the hip. We'll see you next week.